This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyes Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Our greatest fear is that we will see unprecedented levels of starvation and malnutrition sweep across Sudan this lean season, and that the Darfur region will be particularly hard hit.
That was Lenny Kinsley, the World Food Program Communications Officer for Sudan, on food finally reaching Sudan's battered Darfur region. Details coming up. Also, the DRC has its first female prime minister since independence. And Botswana is trying to reverse an initiative connected with the sale of diamonds. These stories and more on African News Tonight.
The UN World...
We start with our top story. The World Food Program reports a convoy of desperately needed food aid has reached the war-wracked Darfur region for the first time in months. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The UN World Food Program reports two convoys crossed the border from Chad into Darfur in late March. They were carrying food and nutrition assistance for around 250,000 people in northwest and central Darfur. Lenny Kinsley, the WFP communications officer for Sudan, expresses relief that lengthy negotiations to reopen these routes have paid off. But she warns unless the people of Sudan receive a constant flow of aid through all possible humanitarian corridors, the country's hunger catastrophe will only worsen.
Cross-border operations from Chad to Darfur are so critical to reach communities where children are already reported to be dying of malnutrition. All corridors to transport food must remain open, particularly the one from Adre in Chad to West Darfur, where levels of hunger are alarming.
She adds the delivery of aid into other parts of Darfur through the Tin border crossing or across conflict lines from within Sudan must become quicker and easier. Since war between the Sudanese armed forces and paramilitary rapid support forces erupted a year ago, the United Nations reports more than 8.5 million people have become displaced, 6.5 million within the country. WFP reports 18 million are facing acute hunger, 90% of them in hard-to-reach areas. Speaking from Nairobi today, Kinsley says lengthy clearance processes for humanitarian cargo, bureaucratic red tape and security threats are making it impossible for aid workers to provide help to people trapped in Sudan's conflict hotspots.
WFP needs aid to be consistently reaching war-ravaged communities through every possible route. Hunger in Sudan will only increase as the lean season starts in just a few weeks. Our greatest fear is that we will see unprecedented levels of starvation and malnutrition sweep across Sudan this lean season, and that the Darfur region will be particularly hard hit.
She says she fears the lean season, which normally runs from May to September, could begin as early as next week and last much longer than usual. Kinsley explains crop production is at an all-time low because the fighting is preventing farmers from harvesting their crops. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Sudan State Television says the prosecutor's office has accused former Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok of inciting war against the state and other charges that could carry the death penalty. The prosecutor's office is loyal to Military Chief Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, whose regular armed forces have been at war for a year with paramilitary leader Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo. 15 other people, including journalists and politicians who, like Hamdok, live abroad, face similar charges such as violating the Constitution. David Monda, a professor of political science at City University of New York, discussed these developments with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi.
I think the Al-Burhan administration, through the prosecutor's office, is actually trying to reinforce the authority of the Burhan administration over the former prime minister, Abdallah Hamdok. And I think part of the challenge is a political one, because Dagalo has and the RSF rebels have endorsed Abdallah Hamdok and his Takadum initiative to try and bring reconciliation to Sudan. And I think this has rubbed the government the wrong way, and this is part of the reason the prosecution is going after him in this way. I think there's another element to this, that the government, the military government, is trying to reestablish its authority to show civilians, civil society that are led by Abdallah Hamdok, that the military is still in control. But I think this also needs to be looked at in a broader dynamic, where the government has also been cracking down on journalists, on foreign agencies like Al Arabiya, Al Hadithia, and Sky News from the UAE, which the government feels have been reporting very negative stories about government defeats, Al-Burhan army defeats in different regions. So I think this whole element is really tied into a whole multiplicity of different issues. The fact that the military wants to reassert its control by threatening Abdallah Hamdok because of his endorsement by the RSF. I think secondly, by going after foreign media. But thirdly, around this fact that the military wants to show that it is still in control of this transition process that frankly never seems to end.
Tom Perriello, a former congressman recently named to a new position as U.S. Special Envoy for Sudan, said that talks to end the Sudan war could start around April 18th. Hamdok has been in talks for several months with Sudanese and regional figures in a bid to put an end to the war. How would the accusations against Hamdok and other civilian politicians impact the U.S. proposed peace talks in Jeddah to end the war?
I think it is a major blow to U.S. efforts to try and broker, you know, a deal, you know, through Saudi Arabia, because Abdallah Hamdok is revered as the leader of the pro-democracy movement that removed the dictatorship of Omar al-Bashir. He was central to the power-sharing agreement that the military decided to scrap. And I think it would be very difficult for there to be a peace process with civil societies and with democratic forces led by Abdallah Hamdok if, for example, he's imprisoned, if he's assassinated, or any harm comes to him, because then that will really radicalize the democratic forces, the civil society groups, and also the belligerents on the other side, the RSF. So there has to be some kind of rapprochement between the Sudanese armed forces, Al-Burhan's regime, and Abdallah Hamdok in order for these negotiations to go forward, because I do not see how Tom Perriello is going to be able to mediate when there's nobody on the other side of the table facing the generals from Khartoum, because Abdallah Hamdok has either been imprisoned or other harm has come to him.
That was David Mondo, professor of political science at City University of New York, speaking with VOA's Mohammed Al-Shenawi. The United States, Mexico, and Canada will witness a total solar eclipse in some cities Monday, when millions of people will experience the celestial phenomenon, perhaps the last until 2044. The sun will be completely covered by the moon in a number of major cities, although visibility will depend on whether the weather is cloudy or clear. People are encouraged to wear special glasses to avoid permanently damaging their eyes from the sun's glare. For perspective, VOA's Zimbabwe service Gibbs Dube reached Dr. Calvin O. Miselela, a professor of geography and regional planning at Indiana University of Pennsylvania, whose academic career spans three decades.
It's an occurrence that is something like once in a lifetime, a total solar eclipse. What that means is that basically you have the shadow of the moon completely covering the sun. And normally, what we're used to viewing is a partial solar eclipse. but this one is unusual. And the way it's going to occur is that the eclipse path will start in the South Pacific Ocean, passing through Mexico, the United States, all the way to Canada. And why is this eclipse unique? It's because most solar eclipses are partial. That is, the sun is part hidden by the moon. Total solar eclipses mean that the moon shadow totally covers the sun. This is rare because the moon's shadow is not big enough normally, and there's a few places on the Earth where a total eclipse can happen. And North America generally just happened to be to fall on the path on this unique path. But to be visible, you must be either on the exact path of the eclipse, or at least along a narrow band, let's say about 185 kilometers or at least 115 miles of the path. And the actual eclipse, that is its totality, darkness or duration of it, it's somewhere around about 4 minutes and a few seconds. And again, for those who probably pay attention to this, I believe the longest recorded total eclipse was somewhere around June 1955, somewhere thereabouts, which lasted something like 7 minutes and 8 seconds.
How often does this happen?
A partial eclipse, for example, almost every, I would say, 7 years. But the full eclipse, like I said, is very rare. Like, for example, the next one that is projected will be sometime in 2044.
Why is it necessary for people to wear those special glasses to look at it?
Well, part of it because it is extremely dangerous to view, at least look at, the eclipse without wearing any protective eyewear. Where it's more dangerous, it's when the moon is partially covering, or this, the eclipse is partially, it's not yet totally full. When it's totally full, you can actually look at it for that period, but as it passes, when it is partially, that's when the intensity of the sun's rays are very, very dangerous to a naked eye. So you have to have protection in order to actually see. Otherwise, you will have, you damage your eyesight.
That was Dr. Calvin O. Miselela, Professor of Geography and Regional Planning at Indiana University of Pennsylvania, speaking with VOA Zimbabwe Services' Gibbs Dube. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. And for more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. The head of Niger's military government has ordered the dissolution of all local councils and put an army officer in charge of the capital. State media says General Abdurrahman Tiani, who ousted the president in a coup last July, signed an order for dismantling municipal and regional councils that were last elected in 2020. The French news agency AFP says no explanation was given. A second decree reported by state radio named military, police, and public officials who will be put in charge of local authorities. In The Democratic Republic of Congo, President Felix Tshisekedi, has appointed Judith Suminiwa the head of the government. Many citizens say they wish her well as she becomes the first woman to hold the post since the DRC gained independence. Zanem Netizaidi has the details.
President Felix Tshisekedi won re-election last December and turned to economist Judith Suminiwa, the former planning minister, to form a government in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Esther Kamala, a member of the Women's Association, thinks Suminiwa's government should focus on restoring peace in the east of the country. She says that as a woman, she is happy to see a female at the head of the government at last. She says she would like to see the Prime Minister make the return of peace her priority, so that all of the displaced people can return to their homes and life can get back to normal. After years of conflicts involving scores of rebel and extremist groups in the eastern DRC, several thousand war displaced people are living in camps in and around Goma. But Chantal Faida, a politician from City, says there still is hope. She says she believes that women have nothing left to prove and that they have a right to be involved in political affairs at all levels. She congratulates the President of the Republic on his decision to appoint a woman to head the government. She is confident that she will be able to deliver the results everyone is expecting, especially the restoration of state authority throughout the DRC. For Zeus Mulemeri, a political analyst in Goma, Suminiwa has already proved what she is capable of. He says this woman has already done a lot of for this country, including in the economic sector. She is up to the task, not because she is a woman, but because she has many valuable skills. Restoring peace will be among the major challenges facing the new Prime Minister. Frustration over the situation has pushed residents in the east to hold numerous demonstrations calling for action against militant groups. For VOA Africa, I'm Zanem Netizaidi in Goma.
The Somali regions of Somaliland and Puntland today rejected an order by the federal government to close Ethiopian diplomatic missions on their soil, citing interference in its internal affairs. Somalia told the Ethiopian ambassador yesterday to leave the country within 72 hours and recalled its own envoy to Addis Ababa. It also ordered the shutdown of Ethiopia's consulates in the breakaway region of Somaliland and the semi-autonomous state of Puntland within 7 days. According to the French news agency AFP, Somaliland countered that the federal government has no authority over its affairs. A Puntland statement said the directive is intended to undermine the progress of the Puntland people and further weaken the federal system in Somalia. The World Bank and Ethiopia have signed a $1.72 billion in loan agreements to enhance electricity and water supply and facilitate the movement of food to markets, including improving road networks in rural areas. The remaining funding will be allocated to supporting programs in towns that employ disadvantaged youths. English Premier League action kicked off midweek with matches day 31 and more upcoming matches this weekend. To brief us on the title race and much more, I have in studio Mokbil Yabaro, our VOA sports analyst in studio. Welcome to African News Tonight, Mokbil.
Thanks for having me, Hayes.
So, Liverpool, Arsenal, and Manchester City are competing to win the English Premier League EPL title. What were the results of their matches?
All right. At the top, on Wednesday, Arsenal played Luton Town. That happens to be towards the bottom of the league. And Arsenal was able to win 2-0, so they were able to get all three of their points. Man City played Aston Villa, and Aston Villa is in the fourth slot, so this seemed to be, was supposed to be a difficult test for Man City, but they won decisively 4-1. And Liverpool played yesterday, and they were also able to defeat Sheffield United, which is at the bottom of the table, 3-1, relatively comfortably, if my man Dave Vandy would like to hear.
Do you think any one of these teams has an easier route to win the league in the final eight games of the season?
I would say that all three teams have different types of challenges, Yehais. When you just look at their next scheduled games, Liverpool is set to play Manchester United on Sunday. Although Manchester United has not been in great form, the last time these two teams clashed in the FA Cup, Manchester United was able to win a very, very very good game, I would say. You know, both teams went back and forth, but I believe Liverpool will be looking for revenge, so they will come out swinging on Sunday, so they should be able to get the job done. Arsenal will be playing Brighton. Brighton is in the ninth slot, so they are a mid-table type of team, but they always pose a lot of threats to a lot of teams, so it won't be really easy, but Arsenal will have to get the job done. And Manchester City plays Crystal Palace, who are kind of towards the bottom of the league. They are in that 14th spot, but this late in the season, Yehaze, you don't really know. Any team can be a problematic team, so it'll be interesting. There are eight games left for all these teams. Each game matters. If any of them drops even one point, it's going to be very difficult for them to make it up, because at the moment, Liverpool is at the top with 70 points. Arsenal's at 68, so they're behind them by 2 points, and Man City has 67. Very tight race at the top.
So they all have to perform right now. And who have been the top performing players in the EPL this season?
Ooh, great question, Hayes. I would say, you know, contrary to popular belief, Erling Haaland is still leading the league in goals scored this season. He has 18 goals for Manchester United. Sometimes, you know, analysts and fans alike tend to kind of dismiss players when they aren't looking as great as they once were. Maybe in a moment he seems to be having a little bit of a slow spill, but nonetheless he's still leading. If we're looking at some African players, we can definitely look at Mohamed Salah, Liverpool. One could say Liverpool legend, you know, 16 points. Amazing wow. Stat about Mohamed Salah this year, the Egyptian, is that he is top five in both goal scoring and assist. So at the moment, he has 16 goals and he also has 9 assists in the league. Another player that if I was to mention that I think has done phenomenally for his team that maybe isn't getting the recognition that they deserve is Mohamed Kudus. Mohamed Kudus has scored about 7 or 8 goals this season for West Ham. He's probably one of the brightest African young stars. You know, he really tried to uplift the black stars of Ghana in AFCON this year. He really was one of the focal points, but unfortunately, you know, Ghana wasn't able to get it done, but it wasn't really on his account. He tried his very best, and he's showing the level of class he has this year. Interesting fact may be, Hayes, he may end up going to a bigger team, you know, because his stock value is rising. So we'll see what happens this summer with Mohamed Kudus. As always, Mohamed Salah is also, you know, playing very well, and he may potentially be able to help Liverpool get that push that they need to stay at the top of the league and to potentially win this league this year.
Mokbilia Barowar, VOA Sports Analyst, thank you for your input.
Thank you, sir.
And with that, We wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiya Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Rob McLean, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.